Welcome to Birth Stories in Color, a podcast creating community for people of color to share and learn from birth stories of all types. We're your hosts, Laurel Gurrier
and Danielle Jackson.
Welcome, Chris and Raquel Williams. Guys, we're so excited to hear from you today. I've missed you. Can you start by telling our listeners about yourself and your family?
Yeah, so I know this feels extra special because, spoiler alert, right? You were our doula. So this, I don't know. They're all special, right? This feels like, ooh,
yes. It is.
Going, you know, back home. But yeah, so I'm Raquel. I am 30 and I, first time mom. So the story is about my first time experiencing pregnancy and childbirth, and to our now soon to be 3-year-old daughter, Riot. And I'll let Chris, my partner, introduce himself.
I'm Chris Williams. I'm a daddy. Definitely first time parent. Even though I felt like when I work with kids, I felt like I parented before. But those are typically older kids. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. We talk about it in passing, but haven't really sat down and intentionally like revisited the entire thing.
Yeah, we were actually joking about that earlier. It's like, wow, we're almost 3 years later, and I can't say that either of us have actually, like, from beginning to end, shared our birth story with anyone, you know, or even like each other, to know like how, you know, because two people can live the same life but experience it differently. You know, I imagine that this will bring up a lot of new things, or I'll be like, wow, I didn't know that you saw it that way or lived it that way, or yeah. And this wasn't like intentionally, right? Like I think for me, part of it is like it takes so long to process.
It does.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a transition. I feel that even now at, you know, just 2-3 years, like I'm just now, like, my brain's mm-hmm. recovering or something from the transition, where I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen. Like, I think your brain blocks a lot of stuff out, even if it was joyful or great, because it's just such a hard time regardless, you know. Even if I think you have the best support system or best circumstances, it's just such a transitional time, is maybe a better way to say it, that your brain it's like, you know what, I'm not gonna think about that right now.
Right. So. We're surviving.
Yes,
the newborn, and then going into like an older infant and toddler stages, it all does kind of feel very much like survival mode. Like, we're just all staying alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Every day, just, oh, if you made it alive to the end of the day, then like I did my job. Because yeah, you underestimate how hard it is to keep a child alive, especially when they're getting toddler age and like they're putting everything in their mouth, and like this is not a game.
It's not. You're right.
Not a game. Yeah. So
let's talk about pregnancy. How did you guys find out that you were pregnant?
Yeah. So I, at the time, like, just to paint the scene, right? It was 2020, you know, what a year. We had already been, it was fall, like late summer, early fall of 2020. So obviously we had already been through like the shutdown, and now not in the shutdown anymore, but still trying to figure out how to like live and navigate and what life looked like. I was not working at the time because I had essentially, it's like hard to say I lost a job because of the pandemic, because I didn't even get to work the job that I was hired for because of the pandemic, right? So I didn't work a single day because of shutdown and hiring freezes and all that. But so fast forward to August, September. still just kind of, you know, move, like, here at home. We weren't, like, trying to have a baby, but we weren't, like, not trying, if that makes sense. I think we were really just letting life happen, but it definitely still was unexpected. I wouldn't say it was planned. I don't know if you would,
I guess you can say it was more or less. I think I just recently maybe received a raise at the organization I was serving at, and it was kind of just like, all right, you know, we played it safe, because I think I had just turned 30. Mm-hmm. And I said, I told Raquel, you know, I was like, I ain't really trying to consider kids until I'm 30 years old. So I just wanted to, like, enjoy our partnership at the time. So I had just turned 30, and it was just kind of like, all right, you know, do. And if it happens, it happens. I'm not really going to be too concerned because I've waited this long. And I felt financially like, you know, I had consistent income and I was starting to grow. Starting to recognize my value, but I was at a place that I did not want to be at, you know? So all that kind of was the pandemic, being at a place that didn't value me. So part of having, I guess, just being open to having a kid was like, man, I'm at this terrible job. So, you know, maybe if a kid comes around, that may bring some balance, right? I could shift my perspective to something that I think mattered more than, like, working at a place that I couldn't stand. Yeah. And we had just, like, days, but I remember we were, like, when you told me we were on the walk, but, like, kind of, like, leading up to that walk, I remember, was I talking to my brother? I can't remember what I was talking to, because you had brought, when you brought up, you know, us being
you
pregnant.
You were talking about your brother, because your brother had just had...
Brother had just had a kid. We were talking about playing video games with my brother, something like that, and then, yeah, I can let Raquel kind
of... Yeah, so I'll say that also on the note of being, we were at in life, I think what was hard for me was because I think, like, prior to the pandemic, I would have said I wanted to have kids at the time that we did, but because of the pandemic, I felt a little, I don't know if a lot of people feel this way, but, like, it almost, like, felt like a regression of, like, oh, I'm not where I want to be, and I don't feel ready to have kids, and I think that's where I initially, maybe my, like, gut response when I found out, was like, oh, crap, like, what did I do type of thing, but, you know, we were there and we had to accept it. But I do remember the week of, like, I didn't think that I was pregnant at all. I didn't feel any different at the time. But my friend Maya, who was living with us at the time, like, we were all living together and had been for the last couple of years, said she had a dream that I was, like, I had a baby. And I thought she was, like, so, like, wild for even saying that to me, you know, like... and it was truly, like, days before, and then, you know, I was like, you know what, like, she might be on something here. So I took a pregnancy test, like, she said that to me on a Wednesday, and I took a pregnancy test by Friday or Saturday, and that's when I told Chris. And like I said, it was a mixed feelings for me in terms of, like, it being actual factual, right? I was excited, but also just felt a little bit, already, like, grieving maybe a version of myself, you know, that, and it's like the baby wasn't even here yet, but I already knew, like, oh man, stuff's gonna change so drastically, and I don't really know if I feel prepared for that or if I was as intentional as I needed to be for this, you know. I think I felt, like, regret for being, like, a little lackadaisy on the family planning end, you know. But yeah, that there we were. So, but Chris's reaction was really positive and, like, joyful, and, you know, that's reassuring too, right? So,
it wasn't what I expected my reaction to be, though. I think given my personality, I thought I would have been a little bit more theatrical, like, oh, like, what? We're also too, just had, I forgot what even conversation we were even having at the park. Because I think I too at that moment I mentioned something about my brother playing video games with my brother, and that's when you're like, oh, by the way, And that's how you kind of rolled into telling me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you're joking. You know, it was more like, you're joking. No, like, really? You know, I was kind of like, is it perplexed?
Yeah.
Like, I was excited. You
were confused.
I was confused. Like, hold on, what? Like, you know, because I don't even recall, quote unquote, what are they, the making of, you know.
Yeah,
the
it wasn't like that. It wasn't like we knew, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
we,
I was like, for real?
You know,
like,
that's what I mean by it. It was unexpected. It wasn't like a knowing of, like, oh, yeah, we probably just made a baby.
Right.
Like
it was just
random. I'm like, we're on this walk, like, yeah. We rarely got out, and I'm just like, yeah, really? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's, yo, like, why are we gonna be parents? Like, that's cool. So for me, I thought it had a more theatrical response, but yeah, I wasn't upset or anything either. I was like, all right, we doing this. It's happening.
Yeah. And then those first few weeks, like when I think about pregnancy, that's where it's like, I think in hindsight too, we've talked about where, like, just the difference of between, like, we both became parents at that moment, right? Like, knew that, but the shift, like, mentally was, we were in different spaces, right? Like,
oh yeah,
I think I already felt like this deep responsibility, and mm-hmm. so anxiety kicked in real quick around, like, what that looked like with me not, you know, being able to contribute financially at that time. And I mean, applying to so many places and not getting anything, and still feeling really scared to be out and about because we don't know much about COVID. And now what will that look like if I get that and I'm quote unquote high risk because I'm pregnant? Like, it just was, I remember I felt a lot of fear probably for the first trimester, second trimester. Like, I felt a lot of fear. Yeah. And that's hard, right? Because they say, like, even when you're, and I've experienced this feeling postpartum, but already in pregnancy, I think, again, there's a lot of grief. I think grief is a theme for me mm-hmm. around having to be pregnant and it didn't go at all how I thought it would be, right? Like, I envisioned when I would be pregnant that I'd be able to experience that time in my life with other people. My life would just look different in terms of what I was doing, career-wise, personally. Like, I felt just, like, kind of an emptiness and numbness and anxiety, worry of just what was going to happen. You know, we took COVID precautions, you know, pretty seriously. So we hadn't seen our parents, you know, we never had the baby shower with folks or were in community with people. So it was extremely isolating to be pregnant and just in the house all the time, like 24/7. And then over a winter, right? Like, the bulk of my pregnancy was over winter. But on the flip side of that, like, hindsight's 2020, right? That I also recognize, I think that same thing that felt really bad then, like the experience of pregnancy, like some of the same things that were really hard to go through were almost what made my birth so good, you know, right. Which I know we'll get to my birth, but like having time to really sit with myself, reflect, like I had nothing but time to reflect and think about myself, who I was, how I wanted to show up as a mom and a partner, and do all the slow, leisurely caring things for myself that most of us don't have time to do because we're obligated to a 9-to-5 or the demands and busyness. Like, we all are all operating on this like sense of urgency all of the time, and like I didn't have that, and so it opened up just room for me to really like live in this strange like personal utopia or something, you know. So like pregnancy all in all was you know, like mentally it was challenging, but the physical experience of it was overwhelmingly like positive, you know?
I remember that space for you guys as your doula and having conversation with Chris about his job, his place in the world as a man, and then having conversations with you about literally being at home, feeling isolated, being really excited for Chris to come home every day. And I remember thinking that you were in this perfect space because you didn't have, even though it's isolating, it was a little hard in those ways, you didn't have the external stress that causes Black women to have challenging and difficult pregnancies. You had a husband who was able to step up and provide in a way that's not everybody's story, right? And that's not always the case. And so I just remember thinking, like, she's in this little bubble and she doesn't have like a boss or a coworker who's, you know, making her experience like microaggressions. She doesn't have to fight with someone about her appointments for to be able to see her midwife. There's so many things and conversations I've had with other people that were pregnant, especially Black women, that these are the things that, you know, these stepping, you were able to focus on your nutrition, what you were eating, and even when it was hard, things that were challenging about, you know, your diet, it was things that in a perfect storm, like, it actually worked for you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you are sharing that. And like, it's this is why I said this is really special too, because we get your perspective too, because you were a part of that. Because that's where I feel now, like, right when I reflect on it, is I didn't have this, like, I didn't see this then, but like once we had Riot, I was like, well, duh, this like makes so much sense, because it's true. Like, I'm so grateful to that time, because, right, like, I had, like, and also adding to that is like, we didn't tell anyone that we were pregnant other than our parents, you know? So I had no outside noise or influence, and, you know, family, you love them, but also family, they have opinions. Friends have opinions. People, like, I had nothing to influence, like, what we were doing and how I was doing things. And I think, like, as a society, like, just pregnant people, especially Black pregnant women, right, birthing persons, get noise all the time of like what they're like, everything is judgment, microaggressions, like you said, the outside stressors and what that does to your body, right? Like, we know, like, stress, it lives in your body. And that's what I meant by like the physical experience. It was mentally challenging, but the physical experience was like a dream, because I had absolutely nothing externally, like, to be in conflict with or press up against, you know? Like, we didn't tell anyone, we didn't put it on social media. Like, it was a bubble, but it was like a bubble of safety and peace, healing and intimacy. Like, it was just really special in that way. And then having the added layer, right, of a midwife and a doula, people who are taking time from their lives to come to our home and care for us, also, right, didn't have to go to a doctor's office. Like, I just, like, wish everyone had access and ability to have the experience in that way that we did.
For sure. And I think a lot of that goes to, you know, you and Chris really were intentional about what you wanted. And a lot of times people take what they can get, right? It's not really a thought like, oh, we have insurance, this is what we do. It's deciding where you want your resources to go and what that looks like for your family, you know? And that to me, it matters, because a lot of times we have like a lot of reproductive justice organizations, and while their work is beautiful, a lot of them are doing everything that needs to be done, right, as much as they can do. But we still have issues, right? There's still people dying every day. But part of it to me has always been that Black women and families, you know, partners, fathers, they will save themselves. And we save ourselves by putting our time and resources into things that matter to us and things that will build us up. So if you take the time and put the resources that you have to, you know, midwife care and what seeing what that looks like and asking the questions, looking for the resources to help provide it and supply it. I'd say it's on us. We'll save ourselves. So
I hear you all are both talking about just the safety net, but like it wasn't as smooth for me because at the same time I was like, my job wasn't supporting me in the way that I felt like a parent would need, right? My job didn't have like paternal leave. They had maternal leave. And I remember telling Raquel and trying to like almost like buck against the system, like they're not giving me the time that I know we need to like actually be present, but I'm willing to like risk it, right? So at the same time, I was risking like losing my job because I knew when I had the kid, when I had Riot, like I was gonna do what I told my job I was gonna do, and I was gonna take that extra time unpaid because, you know, we had saved money, you know, and we knew we were making enough to like, you know, go through this process of having a midwife and a doula, you know, because we did our research. But even then, I didn't feel as confident going into it, maybe as Raquel felt, or like this level of security, you know, because I was one working and trying to do something that most, and I was in an all-Black organization as well, that really wasn't thinking progressively in a sense. So I knew I was going to be the first to do something. And it was scary for me. I'm not going to lie. It was, though I was excited, we were doing what we said we were going to do. There was this underlying fear, like I'm risking it right now. But when I look back, I mean, it was all worth it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, like, I think that speaks to our whole pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum experiences that we really did, and even and the naming of Riot, like our everything from beginning to end was us doing something that we've never seen done before, right? Obviously it's been done before, but in our, a lot of people, right, you do what you know and what's been modeled for you and what people teach you, but neither of us have had any experience with with moving the way that we did, right? Like you said, I've always witnessed, especially mothers and birthing persons, like you take the crumbs that you get, you know, like that's, yeah, the hospital, like, you know, saying it's like, yeah, the hospital sucks, but that's, it is what it is, right? Like, and you just hope for the best. And I think we knew the second that we were pregnant, even if we didn't have the resources or whatever, like it's like an innate knowing of like, this was the way that we were going to do it. And we were going to like make it happen. And you have to, and a lot of that was leaning into community to do that. Even if it wasn't family, right? Like I think about the experience with the midwife, and there were times that we were bartering, right? Like with our midwife to make payments. And, again, like all in the context of access and ability and all of that, right? Like understanding like why people do the things that they do. And but it felt just very important for us to try something like our way. Like we were just determined to do it, you know, like everyone else, like I do remember the few people we did tell, even when it was like we decided to have a home birth, right? It was like, oh my, like, I'm not necessarily like a supportive response. I'll say that, right?
Right.
So yeah. So just hearing you say like, buck against the system with your job and stuff like that feels very, like if we were like a mantra for our whole journey to parenthood, like that feels on brand.
All right. I remember that being frustrating for Chris, and I, when I think about even what you said in the beginning, like how the birthing person, a mother, feels very much like a parent as soon as they find out they're pregnant. And for the father, there's this, that when your child shows up, it's like, oh, I'm a dad. But like that leading up to the actual birth can be a lot of the, I'm about to be a provider, right? Like it's one thing, it was just me and her. Now it's me, her, and another. And really getting through those thoughts and building up to how to do it. What does it look like? You know, and having a job that's not supportive of that, definitely a stressor, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we were still going through personal stuff even in our partnership, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that we had been together at that time, how many years?
Like five years,
I think. You know,
like, and going into five.
Yeah, and we had still, you know, had some big things going on within our partnership. You know, so when you say that, it takes me back to like all the things, like when you find out like, oh, we're pregnant, and you're trying to figure out what do you contribute, right? And I already knew financially, right? Like I'm the one that's working, right? And I've never really adopted the idea this idea of like, because I'm the man, I need to provide. For me, it's like whoever is making it shake, make it shake, right? Like, and it just so historically in our partnership has been kind of like me, because when I first met Raquel, she was in school, mm-hmm. you know, and then, but yeah, I really didn't know what direction. I felt like I leaned into a lot, maybe too much into like Raquel setting us up for like what we have to do, like even just researching on like what to do as a parent prior, right? I wasn't like, I don't know, I wasn't doing those things. Yeah, I think for me, you kind of spoke to it, just like, and I think, I don't know, I don't want to necessarily say it's because I was becoming a parent, but I think because of my background in athletics and the environments I've always been, it's just like, when it's time to show up, you know? And I never really consider preparation. I'm just like, yo, when it comes, I'm gonna be ready, you know. And that had its pros and its cons, but definitely can't really relate to like Raquel's kind of like mental load or process of, you know, just finding out. I was just like, all right, like, don't mess up the money. You know, kind of just a lot of superficial things that I think is projected on you as a black man and being a parent. Like, I'm telling myself, like, don't do all the things that most black men do when they become parents. But then not knowing that I wasn't doing all of the things that a parent, black, white, brown, needed to do, especially like the non-birthing parent needed to prepare for, you know? So it's like, in one hand, I'm like, yo, I'm doing everything that, you know, all other black men don't do. I'm doing those things. Like, I'm there, you know, having the conversations, but like some of those in like just innate things or like intuitive things that as a birthing person kind of like just picks up on, whether it's research, you know, about babies and the whole, I knew I wouldn't have the baby one coming out of me. Right, so some of those things that she researched, I'm like, okay, you know. But when I look back, I'm like, man, I felt like I could have prepared more, you know, in those ways, which probably could have made just like my experience a little bit more in depth, because I feel like a lot of the depth is came post-birth, you know. So yeah. I don't know if we're honest.
Yeah, no, I would just like, I think it's like what I saw in experience was just like a difference in, right, like maybe I was preparing emotionally and Chris was like preparing practically, you know. And I think a lot of it was because of the pressure he felt, right, as a black man, like, oh, I'm not about to be out here living any stereotype, right? Like, I'm gonna show up and be present, and like, you were yeah, like, you did not miss a thing, and still now, like, right, he's never missed a single pediatrician appointment. Like, he's doing this podcast right now. Like, one thing about Chris, he's gonna show up, right? Like, you really showed up. And I remember even that, right? People would be like, what? Like, he's at your appointments, he's at your, like, and that, like, makes me sad, you know? I think that makes me sad to think that, not that I'm not grateful for it, but it's like, that's, I don't, how do you say it? Like, the bar is so low sometimes, or we have such, like, the way we view, like, our men and our partners, right, is so, like, as if they're not a value part of the family unit in that way. Like, that makes me sad to think that he wouldn't be expected to be present at all of that stuff or involved in the way that he is, you know? I don't know. But
let's talk birth.
Yeah, birth. That time.
Riot's birthday.
Well, yeah. So
Swift. For sure.
Yeah, I'll be interested too to hear your perspective from this, right? Like, I will invite that, welcome that, right? Because then this is I just remember the day, right? It was, so she was born on June 3rd, but June 2nd, again, painting the landscape. Prior to that, I had not, so at that point her due date was June 6th. So, and I fully expected, being a first-time parent, first-time, you know, birthing person, like, I didn't have my heart set on having this baby by June 6th, right? Like, I, shout out to you, right? And our midwife for, again, like, just, that's, like, such a beautiful thing was, like, you know, a doctor. I didn't have the experience of going to the doctor where it's my physical symptoms are prioritized. Y'all really prioritized me and my being and like the mental fortitude of having a baby, and like I felt like y'all really equipped me with understanding childbirth, right, and like pregnancy and due dates, right, them being just like such a big guess, and really the reality that we could go 40, 44 weeks even, right? So I didn't hit that, like, oh, I'm feeling impatient thing, but I also hadn't, up to that point, so at being around, like, 39 weeks and some days or something, right, like, I hadn't had any, what they call Braxton Hicks or any type of, like, movement. I also had that, would it be posterior placenta, where, like, Riot was behind it, or whatever the, my placenta was
in the front.
So I never saw
in the front
even a lot of movement. Like, I never had that, like, oh, there's the baby's hand or the foot, like nothing like that. So when I finally, on June 2nd, I was having what I now know were like for real deal contractions or surges or how, whatever the language you want to use for them, I thought that they were like false. You know, like genuinely, I was like, oh wow, like this is I felt fine enough too that I was still walking around. I do remember that day like vividly. I woke up in the morning, I journaled, I did some yoga. This is also a really great example of like what my days looked like while I was pregnant, and how again like had focused time to really care for myself. Made a really great like bagel and cheese, like spinach breakfast sandwich. Like I was living, like just living.
I can't even recall where I was at.
Oh, I'll let you know. I remember this. Yeah. So like I felt so great, and it was a sunny morning. I went for a walk, like really just living the dream. Like if I could go back to this time now, I'd like sign me up. But I started having that. I think I texted you guys, like, so the birth team, right, around, like, noon or something. Mm-hmm. And I had shared that I had this. From my memory, I had this. And I will say, to backtrack, that I had lost my mucus plug, like, already a couple weeks before. So, to me, it wasn't, like, what does this mean? Like, you know, and I think you all responded, like, okay, like, yeah, just keep an eye on it.
Well, I remember you telling us to set up the
tub to like, get things prepared, but don't be panicked, right? Like, because there's a difference between early labor and, like, active labor. And at that time, the midwife said to start timing the space between the surges and all that. And I was doing that, and they weren't close together. There was nothing that was telling me that, like, the baby was coming right now. So I just went about my day. You worked, but it was summer and your kids had, like, a graduation or something. So Chris,
I was just going to graduation.
You were going to, like, kids' graduations and getting cards and stuff. Yeah. And you had asked me even, like, do you think I need to stay home? And I'm like, nah, yeah, like, you're fine.
It was one of my biggest challenges. I had a young lady who was just like, she did not have no support. She had visions of, like, being somebody different. I was like, yo, Raquel, I gotta show up for this young lady. Like, cause I told Raquel earlier that day, like, her own dad was like, I'm not coming to your graduation because you didn't invite my girlfriend. And I remember telling Raquel, like, bro, I'd never do my kid like that. You got me effed up. And I was like, Raquel, I feel like I need to be there. But I'm like, also, too, it's like, this is my family. Like, what happens if, like, you give birth while I'm gone?
Yeah,
you
know?
She's like, it's not going to happen. Just go. It didn't happen. I got home late, too. Like, I ended up taking her out.
We had a super late dinner because you did get home late. It was about, like, 10:30. Mm-hmm. So, mind you, so that was the whole day. The whole day was me just kind of going on and off with that. But because Chris was gone, I didn't get to set up the, like, birthing tub and all of that because it was just too much for me to do on my own. And we thought that we would do it, like, when he got home or something. But he got home and we had a super late dinner and it was like a chickpea masala type thing. Remember that? I remember what we ate and everything.
I think also I also ate pizza. I think I either got them pizza or I had some pizza before I got home.
And we were just chilling and I was bouncing on my, like, birthing ball and I had FaceTimed my parents. But even then, I didn't even let them know that that was happening because I didn't want any type of external panic or, again, other people's stress or anxiety to give me stress or anxiety. So I just kind of kept it to myself, right? I will say now, like, right, dogs and animals are intuitive. And I'm like, I wish I would have connected this. My dog kept acting so strange with me. Like, she's always pretty clingy, but she just, like, would not leave me alone.
She kept coming up between her legs, like, you know, bumping into her. I do recall that.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, my God, get off, like, just leave, you know. And now I'm like, oh, she probably had this, like, intuition that something was happening. But, so, yeah, by, like, 10:30, it's still my surges were not close enough to the point where I felt like I was in active labor. And I checked in again with the midwife. And she let me know, like, okay, like, if you kind of, like, use your discernment and your own judgment, like, and I loved that about that too, right? Like, there's a trust there. And the whole time, my whole pregnancy was me really, like, trusting myself and trusting my body and, like, with your guys' guide. What?
It just, when you say whole time, I always just think about how we'll get there. But
oh, okay. Yeah. And then, so yeah, so I actually took a Tylenol PM, and I regret this one thing to the day, because that baby must have been strong, because I took that, Chris and I got in bed, so it was 10:30, we had a super late dinner, then we
did the facials, you were on the
ball. Yeah, we got upstairs, I was bouncing on the ball, Chris and I did facials, we watched a movie, nice. We were just, like, vibing, yeah, like, having such a good time. And then I obviously at that point in pregnancy, sleep is still really hard. Like, you just can't get comfortable and whatnot. So I took a Tylenol PM to help. And we had the phone out, like, with the timer just in case. Mm-hmm. And then about 4 in the morning, like, a little bit earlier than that, I did wake up, and they were getting closer together, but there just wasn't enough time for me to alert anybody, because I woke up, Chris was, like, in a deep sleep, and I did get mad, because I was, like, I felt like he wasn't taking me seriously, because I was starting to really hurt, and I said, like, hey, I think I have to poop, and he helped me to the bathroom.
Yeah, I visually see you just waddling to the bathroom, because we had the light, I think the light in the bathroom was on that night.
Yep.
I remember her just walking down the hall.
We walked down the hall. I sat down, I sat down on the toilet to do what I thought was take a number two, and I'm pushing to go to the bathroom, and Chris looks down, and he's like, verbatim, like, that, I don't think that's poop.
Yeah, like, she's sitting down on the toilet, and I was standing at the door, so I'm not about to cramp her space, but she did one of those movements where, like, she pushed up on the toilet seat,
like, ooh.
And I was just like, yeah, she's like, ooh, that shit hurt, and I just was like, oh, snap, I don't think that's poop. And I, like, low-key panicked.
And he said it just like that, too.
Yeah, and I was like, I was confused. It just didn't look right. I thought the baby was dead. I was like, deflated. It looked like a deflated football. Like,
because you weren't aware that, like, and I'm, a lot of people, right? Like, that's normal thing to not really be aware of, is that, you know, right, babies, their head's pretty adaptive to go through the birth canal.
It
so
is.
Chris, when he had seen that, like, the head was kind of more like coned, he lost all color. He looked dead in the face. He was so visibly scared, and I just
I remember laying her down. I remember she was sitting on the toilet. I grabbed a towel. I think I even at that point had screamed up to our housemate Maya. I was like, "Yo, this baby's come, like, yo, the baby's head is coming out, bro." Mm-hmm. And I remember grabbing a towel and just setting it down. And Raquel was kind of like sitting up on the tub, and Riot was, you know, her head was starting to come out a little bit more than what it was, and I was just like, why is the baby still in, like, the casing, right? Like, I'm like, what? You know, I'm like, I don't know what this thing. I'm just like, yo, well, I think what I said was, why is the baby still in a sack? Like, I knew babies were supposed to come out the sack, but I was like, yo, the sack ain't broken.
Yeah, you were worried that
and I'm like, then Raquel just kind of was, like, laying there in, like, in this zen state and would just grab my arm and was like, Chris, it's going to be okay. And I'm just like, you sure? She's like, yeah, we're good. Like, calm. Like, you got a head hanging out of you. And you're just, like, talking like you're at the coffee shop. And then by that time, we had got the midwife on the phone. And she was just navigating us through on the phone and talking to Raquel about her breaths. And just pacing Raquel the contractions and, like, when she's supposed to push. And then there was another stage where, even though Raquel had told me, like, things were good, it was when the babies, and also too, we didn't know what we were having, so clearly we didn't even know the name. So I'm also too, like, trying to paint the picture of, like, don't know what you're gonna have. I don't want to make it seem. It's weird because I'm saying Riot, but
yeah,
it's,
I, like, think you're, what you're saying is, like, truly for everything to understand was uncertain.
It, yeah, it's uncertain.
Like, there was
so,
nothing certain about anything.
So the head is stuck in between, like, Raquel's vagina, and it's like, I'm thinking the baby's being choked, and you can just see the face and the head was smushed. I'm like, yo, this thing is dead. You know what I mean? And again, like, Raquel assured me, like, yo, it's okay. Just relax. And the midwife was telling us the same thing. And then you started seeing the baby's mouth start to move. You know, and I wanted to, like, poke a hole. I'm like, I wanted to put my finger there. But it happened so fast that by the time, like, Raquel pushed maybe the third time, everything just kind of came out. Like, the sack came off. The baby shoulders, like, it wasn't even like a moment where you saw the shoulders, like,
it was neck, and then baby was out. I remember catching the baby. Baby's the umbilical cord was around her neck, and Raquel is just like talking to me, like, "All right, take it around." And the only thing I remember through the whole pre-process, like talking to the men, like my responsibility was like chest to chest. Like that was the only thing I was focused on. Like it's chest to chest as soon as this baby comes out because of all the information about the bond and stuff like that. So I caught her. Raquel's like, just take it around. It's going to be all right. And then, I handed her over. And literally, probably as I'm handing Raquel the baby, the midwife, like, walks in and just kind of, like, you know, just took over, you know. And I just remember seeing, I'd never seen a woman's body do that before. Like, I recall seeing a video of my mom, but I just remember seeing it. It might have been my sister or my brother's head. It might have been my sister. Because by the time my sister was born, I was maybe 9, 10 years old. But, like, to see all that and then all of the fluids, just, like, I'm glad the midwife and then were kind of like, I didn't have enough time to even get nauseated because it was just like, the bathroom's small, midwife needs to come in and do her thing. But I just remember, like, yo, what? I didn't even know a person's body could bleed that much. And it was just like, that's one of the most vivid things I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, and I just remember going in the room, like, yo, you know, at the time, like, did I deliver a baby? Like, did I just do that? You know, and now, you know, Raquel knows. I didn't deliver the baby. I supported in catching the baby. Raquel delivered that dog.
He was saying the story to someone.
Yeah, I was telling everybody the story. Like, I delivered the baby.
And I said, you did what?
Yeah, I caught the baby, right? So now I know I caught the baby. I just remember.
You don't get to take that power.
Yeah, I just remember being in the hallway just, like, rubbing my head, like, I thought this was supposed to last longer. I thought this was supposed to be like an hours process. It hadn't even been 10 minutes.
Yeah, we know the exact time was. So I sat on the toilet and stuff. It was 4:30 exactly. Riot was out, like, on skin to skin with me by 4:38. Like, it was unreal.
And that's why I'm laughing, like, all that time. It's just like, yo, it went by so. And I'm just like, this didn't just happen that fast. Like, this type of stuff doesn't happen. I'm preparing myself to go through, like, everybody's like, yo, it's 24 hours, 48 hours. And I'm just like, bro, McDonald's just opened. Like, we gonna be up, like, you know what I mean? We're about to eat breakfast within the next 30 minutes. Like, it was unbelievable, man. It was, and I would love to say, like, I felt like this spiritual sense, but I kept telling myself, like, I was like, the only thing I could point back to was the preparation. Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe just Raquel being prepared, because Raquel didn't scream not one time. She said,
I did when we were in the room, but that's when I was like, you were like sleeping. I wasn't like screaming, but I was going through it.
Yeah, but it was more like a moan, like a deep, like, ugh. Yeah. Uh-huh. But even when she was pushing, she wasn't like screaming like you see on the TV. And I'm just like, yo, this is strange. Like, she's like a superwoman, like superpowers. Like, this shouldn't be like this. Like, where's all the screen? So I was thrown off because I had already prepared in my mind for something. So I'm just in the hallway, like, pacing back and forth, like, what is going on right now? And then finally, I remember them coming into the room with the baby. And yeah, I was like, we found out, you know, I think I knew in the bathroom that it was a girl.
Yeah, you
I was
like, said yo, that. We got that was, a girl. I think, the first thing
yeah,
you said.
First thing I said, I said, yo, it's a girl. Yeah. But yeah, and then I don't know everything's just kind of, it's blurry, but was it after the fact when we were naming Riot, when we kind of made the connection between your grandmother and how you were positioned, or was it the same day?
Because we didn't even name Riot days. Yeah. We maxed out on like how many days we could wait name her.
And Raquel, and I thought Raquel would have been in maybe she didn't verbalize. I thought she would have been in more pain. I'm sure she was in. She kept saying it felt like the burning sensation, right? But it was just interesting. Like, we're all just like kicking it in our bedroom. And I'm like, yo, so I think Raquel said she was hungry. And I'm like, so what does everybody want to eat? I think I even asked you, like, yo, you want some? Like, we're going to McDonald's. Like, you want some as well? And And yeah, it was just like to be in our own space felt so comforting. Like we weren't at the hospital, right? Let's drink that, okay? I know you're being silly, but let's swallow it, okay? But yeah, it was just to be at the crib and just be, we were in our bed. Like just be kicking it in our bed, and I'm like, we're not at the hospital. We don't have anybody like trying to take the baby away. Like everything was so, the amount of intention. I knew we had a team, and I knew your spirit. I knew how you cared about us, right, as people, right, individually. I knew about how the midwife cared about us, but like seeing it in practice, and like everybody coming to you. You know what I mean? Like everybody's focus was like on us and like what we needed, was something that, you know, I don't take for granted, because given that we were, and we were prepared to have the kid in the hospital if we needed to. It wasn't like we were anti-hospital, right? We were pro with however safely a baby needs to get here. But to be in that space and, you know, to think about being in a hospital and everybody just like, like other people there, like even other patients, like to not have that, it just, I was like, y'all don't ever want to do this any other way. I'm like, I was like, and kind of like ignorantly, I'm like, how do people even have babies outside of their homes? Like, everybody should have this opportunity. But now, you know.
I think what you said though, it goes back to like just the preparedness and us, like I want everyone. Like you said, how we felt, not if you have a baby in a different way, like how we felt is how everyone deserves to feel, like throughout pregnancy and childbirth, you know, that feeling of feeling so valued and sacred, and just like how Riot came was exactly how she needed to come. Like, and it felt really symbolic of the pregnancy, right? Like it just being us and our unit. Right? And like what you were saying earlier, Danielle, about we'll save ourselves. Like everything that we need to have children and raise children and beyond that, right? And be in community with, like, it, everything we need, we already have. And I feel like that was like what that moment really meant for me, right? Like also something that stuck with me throughout the whole time was, you know, you encouraged me to like make that birth banner, right? For
we had that
like birth banner with like quotes and statements, and
that was
and
fun.
It was like but you, I think something that really changed the trajectory of like how I thought about myself and pregnancy too was something you said to me probably early on, and I don't know if you even remember this, but about like where my power is. Like I think I was explaining maybe anxiety I had around stuff, but like I think you point blank said, oh, you're giving them too much power, in terms of like referring to like a doctor or something, you know, like, and it goes back to like, I think I just, how we had Ryan stuff was that reminder or that true like moment of feeling like, yeah, like everything I have I already, or everything I need I already have, and I do have power in. And yes, things happen beyond our control, but like that doesn't mean that, like, yeah, like my power, my strength or whatever is removed from that, you know. I don't know, there's just like, there was a, I don't know if that makes sense, but that to me was really like my peace and my knowing of like things were gonna be okay, because like I had trust that We've been having babies like this forever.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, I think you can sum it up like, you know, people been having babies like this with less, right?
Yeah. Like we can, it's not like there's no person, there's no doctor that it, like even you guys, right? Like you guys can't have the baby for me. Like you can guide me and like invest your energy, encourage me and uplift me, but nobody can do this the way that I can do this, because it's my body, you know? And yeah, so I just felt prepared, right? And again, all that, those things that I did prior, right? Having the time to journal, to reflect, to not, essentially not feel stressed in those physical ways, when it came to the actual moment that was really stressful, I had good coping. Like, I had built a really strong toolbox or whatever. I had good coping strategies or things that I had been doing deliberately for 9 months, 10 months nearly, right? That I got to put in practice, and they, like, that to me was really what it was.
Hashtag doula gang.
Yeah. For real. Like, seriously. Like, it just, yeah, it was remarkable. And then, like Chris said, that the ability to transition from our bathroom to our bed.
Right.
Like, what? Like, so good. Yeah.
Walked down the hall, walked great. Right back down.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, the best, right? Like, there was no discharge, no whatever. Like, let me just get in bed real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Have a little nappy nap. Like, it was just really...
Yeah, even the placenta, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, just, yeah.
We in the bed with this dope, like, knitted placenta bag. And it's just like... It made me think of that when you said discharge. Because, yeah, people are waiting to be discharged back to their room, mm-hmm. right? And, like, it'd be those opportunities where, like, some of your power gets taken because, you know, people are just in transition and the hospital... ain't asking you, kind of like from
I think it's like we're literally told what to do our bodies. And even I think about, like, you know, the nursing, breastfeeding after, right? And, like, you know, what's encouraged or taught.
Yeah,
or
we didn't we didn't wipe the cream cheese off a riot.
Yeah, like, no one was pushing us to do anything, right?
It's
like
cream cheese.
Is that
Vernix.
What is that stuff called?
It was Vernix.
Yeah, the Vernix, yeah.
Yeah, like, it was really...
yeah. Cream cheese, man.
Yeah, it was just really, like, innate, like, and we were allowed to show up authentically and not have to do anything that we didn't feel comfortable doing. You know, options and choices were always given, and education was always provided, but... at the end of the day, we were always, like, encouraged to do what was best for us, you know? And, yeah, so that the birth was, and I know, too, like, now working in a perinatal health space that, like, how unfortunately rare my experience is, right? Like, so many birth stories are traumatic, right? Like, so many people have trauma and grief and, mourning in relation to their birth stories, and like I feel so like grateful to be able to say, like, I don't at all, like, maybe bits of pregnancy, but really my birth and like that, I feel nothing but like absolute joy.
Yeah, I'm hoping,
around.
I'm gonna be salty if it don't happen like that.
Yeah,
again.
Like, it's like if it set the right. bar so high.
It did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
It was beautiful. It really was.
Yeah, I remember the day for sure. I remember the daytime and checking in with you. And I felt good about where you guys were. And I tried to just not overdo it. I would say I check in with you every few hours. And then I think you just went dark. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well. She's either knocked out and everything chilled out, you know, maybe it was, you know, a little premature. I said, or we're having a baby soon, right? And I said, I think she's in labor land, which is just this deep space of, mm-hmm. you know, being really connected to your body. And
knocked out.
If you're not in, right. Exactly. And so when you said that, you took the Tylenol PM, I said, yep, that sounds about right. So mm-hmm. when I got the call at like 4, and I was like, well, I'm not going to quite make it there. It was like, what, 4:30 or around there. You're like, she just had the baby, you know, and it's like, okay. I was like, well, I guess I was right.
Yeah,
she wasn't
supposed to be
in it.
Yeah,
We didn't have it. It did not. We didn't put the picture. Everybody, it's just like the picture person went there.
No one was there.
No one. And it's like bittersweet, right? You had this great experience, but then like how you prepped it, it didn't go to plan, but then it also didn't go to what people typically experience, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember you pulling up after the fact, the camera, what was her name? The lady that takes our photos?
Oh, yeah, Rachel. Yeah,
Rachel, she came. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah, like we had the birth photographer, the doula, the midwife, like thinking we're going to have this whole team for the, you know, whole
thing. Now we got cell phone footage.
Barely.
Barely, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah, because Maya ran down and like she was half asleep. So understandably, like the picture, the only reason we have video is because the pictures were taken on live, right? Shout out to that. Mm-hmm. Like you could take live photos. Mm-hmm. So if you hold it down, you can get like 5 seconds something.
Right, right.
Yeah. No, it's just... That's funny, and it's I love hearing.
It was
from
cool though because I'd like always,
because you've been doing this for how long?
I've been doing it since 2017. So, I remember Jessica, the CEO of Root. She would always say that you did your job if you're no longer needed in the room, and. As a doula, I would always think, like, I've been to all these births. I can't, it's not that I couldn't imagine not being in it. It was just kind of like, I was sad that I wasn't there in it. But it was just like, no, this is what she said. It's actually happening. Like, I really felt like this team and the work that I put into supporting you and you guys digging into it. It wasn't like, it's one thing for someone to provide the information and to encourage and do all the things, but when someone can actually receive it and taking it within their own power, like to do it, it was it. And I was like, this was perfect. This was beautiful. Like they did it. And that helps going into your parenting journey anyway, because you're not looking for someone else to do it, right? You know that it's already within you. Having a positive birth experience helps you go into, you know, your own motherhood, your fatherhood with a level of confidence like, okay, I'm about to start making a lot more decisions for another person and I can trust myself to do it.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that because we both have very parallel upbringings with our parents, right? A lot of blendedness. You know, tradition, but we were like, yo, we're raising this kid.
It's okay. I think I know where he's going, so I'll pick up on it. But like, yeah, like I think even, right, going to your point of like how we entered then now the parenting piece, now that Riot was here, it was very much like, again, we're doing this from our own knowing and not from what's been modeled for us, you know, and like respectfully, right, to our parents, but we just wanted to do it.
Yeah, and it's just being able, like she said, she shared that, you know, just being able to make decisions and trusting your decisions. It's like what we're doing, like what we did, all this prep, like we never seen nobody go through it. So I'm like, you know, part of me is too, is like that, like, man, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like I'm in it, but I'm also too like, man, this is like, it's a little extra, or this ain't about to map out. It's not about to give the results that we're putting. But then when I think about like some of the quote unquote unorthodox ways we're raising Riot right now, it's like, man, is this going to work? Like, is us doing this differently, the choices that we're made, going to, you know, work? Right. And work could be, you know, I think as parents, we're like, we want to make sure we have like the best kid ever. But, you know, it's just like you think of that, but you just kind of assured me like, yo, I've been through this process before, doing things that one, I'm unfamiliar with. It's different than the norm, but like it worked. And the intention that I put into it is what assured me in those moments that I was doing the right thing for us. Can't speak for everybody else, But what mm-hmm. we're doing, it worked for us. And I'm interested to see how that kind of maps out, you know, as Riot gets older, you know, with the gentle parenting and the level of communication we're trying to develop with amongst ourselves and her, and seeing kind of like their result and be like, you know what, like, we're two for two.
Yeah. You know? I think it's like funny because you said like your goal, right? Or like, you know what the job's done as a doula when is like when you're not needed there. I feel like that's how we feel as parents now. Like, right? Where our goal is to equip her with the emotional, you know, like skill set and whatever, like to be able to, like, you know, we all I think just want our kids to be like good people, to be connected people, to be, you know, just to be mindful and intentional, and like she feels, you know, empowered, right, to also be herself fully, even if it conflicts with us, right? Like, we want her to be able to be who she is, even if it's not who we are or who we want her to be, you know. So
right,
yeah. And it's funny talking about it now because it's like it sounds so like insightful and so clear, but obviously during it, like, you're not actually fully aware of it, you know. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, like, obviously now we're out of it and removed to really see like the divineness of it, I guess, is what I'm saying. So it does feel spiritual to me, like everything was really divine and what we needed, not necessarily like what we exactly wanted, but it just all aligned really perfectly. And, you know, it's like, just even I reflect on like Riot's name a lot too, because people always ask us like, how did you guys come up with that? And I don't even think in that moment this was our thinking, right? Like, this is like the divineness of it. Is so we waited several days. Riot was never on our like list of names. We had a few, but we didn't know what we were having or anything like that. But like, it was just like a look. It was us finally sitting there a few days after childbirth, like processing all that, what transpired. And it felt just like she named herself, right? Like, when you think about also the time, the context of 2020, right? And like, I think about Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and that. Not that like riots and everything are new, they weren't, but we were experiencing a new, like a renewed awareness and organizing and all of that, if that makes sense. But like when we had her and like how we are parenting now, it just felt like everything we were doing was in direct pushback of the norm, right? Like paving our own way. And then how Riot entered the world was like in her own way. And I think about her and who she is as a person and like her name and the context of that, of like just how, you know, sometimes we really need, like, you know, we can't necessarily rework systems, but we have to create a new, right? Like, we can't always change or modify, but we have to completely like unravel, break down, like, and riot, resist, and you know, like, struggle for something more. Like you said, like, we're going to save ourselves. And I felt that, like, in pregnancy. And then I felt that, like, when we named her, like, that's the feeling, right? It was like, this is just...
Oh, yeah.
It was just spiritual. I don't know if that makes sense for you or how you relate to that. But I just... And then how we parent now. I just feel like we're constantly trying to go our own way. And
yeah,
like,
I think I'm obviously, you know, I'm one of those, I don't want to say conspiracy, but definitely universe. The universe will definitely affirm you, mm-hmm. right? No,
yeah,
matter God, religion, whatever, like, yeah. The world will affirm you. And I was affirmed when we started really trying to understand why we named Riot, because, you know, I think I'm under the belief that, you know, your name has so much power in your journey. Right. And there's actually meanings for names, you know. But I remember walking in, this might have been, was it 2018 where your grandmother passed?
Yeah.
So 2018, Raquel's great-grandmother passes. And we weren't, and this great, it's interesting how she had a closer relationship with her great-grandmother than she had her grandmother, right? Even sometimes with her own mother. Like, man, you are really connected to this lady. And I remember seeing Raquel, like when we named Riot, I had this like moment where I was daydreaming. I just saw Raquel laying there between the toilet and the tub. And I remember seeing Raquel's great-grandmother's body between the toilet and the tub in the exact position, because she passed in the restroom. And this, it was just like the universe just slapped me in the face and just was like, yeah, you know, don't worry. Like, her name is her name. And then, you know, me, I'm like, all right, so I'm making this connection. I'm telling Raquel. Raquel's like, I don't think you looked at her body when she passed.
I didn't.
So she didn't. So Raquel really couldn't connect, right, with what I had seen, because I for some reason, I just was like, I'm like, oh, I want to, respectfully, I want to see a dead body. That was my closure. That was closure for me.
Yeah,
like, I needed to see that, right, because yeah. I need to know people are gone to like really know that people are gone, you know. So I'm letting her know that, but I remember deep diving and being like, all right, we named her Riot. Let me see when her grandmother was born and where she was born. And I don't know the specific details, but I do remember that the year she was born and where she was born, there were riots that had taken place, like where stuff was being, like almost like the Cincinnati riots, like riots that really, made national, you know, news type of riot. And at that moment, I was like, wow, look at that. And Raquel, still to this day, has a little name for Riot, because Riot is her first name was, I felt like, was so strong, and I kind of like told Raquel, like, yeah, we're not doing
her
a middle name.
We didn't give her a middle name on her birth certificate.
Yeah, on her birth certificate. So I'm like, no, like, her name is Riot. That's enough. Like, I don't want nobody trying to take her middle name and use that. Like, there's so much power in her name. And Raquel was like, but I would love for it to be Ruth. And Ruth was her grandmother's name. And I didn't push back. It was just like, all right, that cool. You know what I mean? Like, we always know that,
yeah,
right?
That's like
our in-home.
It's like in-home, like, secret. Like, something no. Riot will find out as she starts learning herself and, like, why she was named Riot. Like, I could tell her, like, yo, and connect all these dots. So that's how I know, like, just even waiting to name her. You know how taboo that is in a black community? Like, I tell people, like,
they
hated it. A couple of days to name her.
Yeah.
They're like, you did what? If you named her, huh? Oh, yeah, she going, and it's just like...
Yeah, and even now, right, people find out her name, and they're like, oh, good luck with that.
Yeah,
right?
Oh,
well,
my God.
But we know the depth of it. We know the heart of, like,
yeah,
why she's there, and the person,
like,
behind,
why I
like...
I reflect on it so much is because, yeah, when people say, like, oh, good luck with that, and I'm like, that's, like, I want more of that, right? Like, I want more of that. I want more of us to embody that spirit, to just, like, do things our own way, like, mm-hmm, you know, like, F what anyone else has to say about us, to us, tell us, like, again, everything we need, we already have, and we could just, like Chris likes to say, make it shape, like, just, mm-hmm, you know, it doesn't have to be this really, like, negative...
She got rainbow footprints.
Yeah, she does.
You know what I mean? Just even something like, people laugh at that, and it's like, but like, we did what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my daughter has a rainbow footprint on her certificate, on her certificate of birth.
Yeah, her little foot stamp.
You know what I mean? It's just like, how, it's just, you know, it's just,
it's the audacity.
I might have been the one down.
Yeah,
it's audacity. You've had audacity.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, man. So it was the birth experience. You got me looking back, because even up to this point, I knew we were gonna have this conversation, but I just never even considered the story. Really, I still haven't really, like, I'm going back.
Yeah, now it's like it kind of is bringing everything up, and it's funny because I do think, like you said, the audacity. I think part of our even personalities, individually and together as a couple, is low key kind of like the more someone tells us like it's not going to work out that way, the harder we push to do it that way, right? Like, even from, you know, I like silly things, right? Like, y'all think y'all gonna cloth diaper? Like, you won't last a day. Like, literally, family telling us, and here we are, like, 3 years later, right? And it's not to be...
$1,000 saved.
Yeah, and that's not to, like, prove a point of, like, that's we're better than, but it's like, no, you know what? Like, we're capable of doing what we want to do.
Making decisions, I think, and I don't want to be long with it, but... Yeah. Making decisions that you feel are best for your family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think we give enough thought about that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what decisions are going to be best for your family? Because those decisions you make, you have to, the cliche, you have to live with them.
You do.
And you have to answer for those, right? So just being able to stand on business with that one, yeah, right?
There we go.
Now it's like,
yep.
It's cool. I'm grateful for it, and, you know,
yeah.
Look forward to doing it again someday.
Yeah.
For sure.
I love it. When I heard Riot's name, I was like, yeah. Just yeah. Right now. It's right now. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Is there anything else that you guys would like to share, whether it be resources or advice, with our listeners?
I think... So right. I know, like, advice is sometimes hard to share, right, in the world, I think, of parenting, because I know I don't want this to be unsolicited, but it's been asked, so, you know, you shall receive. But my advice really is, like, it's what we've been saying this whole time, of to, like, trust your intuition and your knowing, and even if you think you might not be able to do something, be curious about it, right? You don't know what's possible until you try, really. What's available to you. I'd say really just be curious about what you want to do, and seek out those things, because I think there's a lot more is possible for us than what we might be told or believe. And right there, that opens up a whole world of and wealth of information and resources there, right? Like, again, like when we got pregnant and we found y'all, found our team, no one gave that to us. We sought it out because we were curious.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got curious, at first we didn't think it was possible. Like, how do we afford this? Insurance doesn't cover it. Like, all the things, all the barriers. But then we got curious about those too, right? And tried to figure out, like, well, okay, this is a barrier, but how can we work around it or push through it? And next thing you know, like, it just opened the doors. And a lot of that was also getting uncomfortable and asking people for help and, like, being vulnerable and honest and all that. So I think curiosity and just a self-trust and a self-knowing, like, your gut, your intuition are really, really great guides.
Yeah, I've been really processing this idea of going slower to get further faster. And this concept has just been burned into my mind out of my journey through marathon running and running, trying to learn how to run further distances and do it in times where my ego can, you know, take cheer, if you will, right? But when I think about that statement, or just even think about our journey, I think about from day one, it's the small things. It's this, when I do a lot of things that resist my ego, I always remind myself the small numbers add up. And I remember all the small, consistent things we did from knowing that we were pregnant. It hadn't even been 2 weeks You know, we already had a team, right, to train us, right? When you want to go further distances and, you know, be the fastest man or woman in the world, you get a team, right? You don't do that midway. You do it from day one. And then you're slowly chipping away and being consistent. And when I think about our birth story, it took forever. Right? She's pregnant, nine months.
Pregnancy takes forever.
Right? It's 9 months. It's not like it's around a corner. It's 9 months. You have a pace at which you want to go, right? But when you really sit down with it and look at, you know, when I look at like what got us to the finish line, and it's something that's sustainable, it's those small, mundane things that we did day in and day out for a long time. It took forever. We trusted in it. And it's funny, at the end of it, we had a 8-minute, I think that's how I wrap it up. It's like, we had an 8-minute birth. And even if it wasn't 8 minutes, I felt like we were so prepared mentally, physically, and spiritually for so long, at a pace that didn't burn us out. I think that's the thing as well that I maybe not have communicated in that phrase, is like, we weren't burnt out. Yeah. Most of the times people feel like they get better by training hard and training fast, but it's for a quick second. And you typically have to do it so much that you burn out. But we just took the long, slow game, or the marathon for the listeners. That's, you know, we always like, you know, I think of Black Community Connects, Nipsey Hussle's pass into a marathon and doing all the small things and taking your time and life being a journey. But like, I think I can resonate with it and just really understanding any advice for birth, relationship, partnership, parenting, personhood, motherhood, fatherhood, is start going slower. Being more intentional, right, to go further, right, for longer, but faster, because you're able to maintain and be consistent across a long time, you know. And that would be, it's probably a commercial, babe. It that'd be my advice, like, to sum it up: go slow, to go further faster, and you know. I probably won't be able to sleep tonight just thinking about it.
I'll add real quick, because I want to be mindful of time, but just in hearing all this too, it's like, I think I can't like leave the space without also just adding just the reiteration of just like turning within, not just yourself, but like your community of people, like you said. Yeah. Like, I just, like when Chris was saying, like, yeah, we built the team, and I want to be careful to have this conversation and like ever put out the perception that it was like something spectacular that we also solely did, right? Like, yes, we did a lot of things, and I'm not going to take that away from us, but I also just know like how much stuff is put onto us, especially right as Black women and Black men, like in the Black community, is placed upon us, and like, to having to like shake, like, again, like, we were so confined that we didn't have to navigate that. So it's like, when I think about advice for someone who does, right now we are living in a, and I'm having air quotes, post-pandemic, because, right, like, are we really post-pandemic? We're not in shutdown anymore, but like, as we're moving about again in the world and having those interactions and stuff, and right, going to work with microaggressions. And I know even now, if I was pregnant again, like, it would look completely different because the context is different. And so it's like, what you can control within that too is like, just not, it's like a mental game, right? Of just really recognizing like where power resides, where truth resides, and just not letting other people take that from you. You know, and whatever that looks like, because that's one thing too, is like, I think about our experience, and it's how grateful I am, and also just how it was really like a unique in that, can it be duplicated in the context of how society changed? Like, it was unique because of the time that we were in.
Yeah.
And it's right. So it's hard to like transfer that now, right? To say that all the things could align in the same way. Because systems, right? Like I'm just
trying to have another pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. We're not wanting another pandemic, no. But you know, like who, like just yeah, who can make those decisions? But like, yeah, get like turning to people that you trust and like yeah, y'all. Like I know you said like you were sad that you weren't there, but like you were in mm-hmm. spirit, you know. It really equipped us. Yeah. It was huge. It was really transformative to this like where how it went and where we ended up.
Beautiful. Such a beautiful story, beautiful family. And the unsolicited solicited advice was perfect.
Right. US, so, you know.
Thanks for listening to Birth Stories in Color. To hear this show and other episodes, head to birthstoriesincolor.com.